You are listening to the Wool Academy podcast. This is episode number 9.
Hello and welcome. My name is Elizabeth Van Delden, and once a week we talk to an industry expert from the wool industry supply chain, from farm to fashion and beyond, delivering strategies and insights to be successful in wool and showcasing those beautiful stories wool has to tell.
Today's episode is supported by The Wool Room. The Wool Room is dedicated to delivering you a better night's sleep. At thewoolroom.com, you can choose from a wide range of mattresses, mattress protectors, bedding and beds filled with British wool, ensuring that you stay cool and comfortable at night. Find out how wool can improve your sleep by visiting thewoolroom.com and claim your 10% discount with the promo code WOOLACADEMY. That is the promo code WOOLACADEMY written all in one word. Today's episode is one of a two-part series. When I talked to Rob Langtree, he shared so much valuable information that it was enough to fill two episodes. So in episode 9 and episode 10, Rob Langtree shares his insights about communications and wool. When you listen to this episode, you will see that it is almost like a mini tutorial on how to develop your communication strategy for your own wool business or product. To make things easier, make sure you visit the show notes, because that's where we captured most of the points that Rob mentions during the interview. We also want to apologize for the audio quality, as the audio connection between Germany and Australia wasn't the best during the recording. In case you missed something in this episode, there is a transcript available and you can access it by going to the show notes on elizabethvandelden.com/009. And now enjoy the first part of my interview with Rob Langtree. Today on the show we have Rob Langtree, and since my background is in communications, Rob has always been one of my personal superheroes of the wool industry. I had the pleasure of meeting Rob during my time at IWTO when he worked for 7 years as the Global Chief Strategy and Marketing Officer at the Australian Wool Innovation and Woolmark Company. What always amazed me is how much value Rob contributed to the wool industry through his strategic marketing campaigns. There are a few of his campaigns I want to mention in particular, where Rob showed great leadership in making these campaigns a success. These include the Woolmark Prize, the Campaign for Wool, which we talked about many times already on the show, and he and his team also launched Wool Week in 10 major retail markets successfully. Today, Rob has his own brand and communications consulting business under the name Consultus Council. And that is as much as I'm going to say about Rob, because the problem is when you are as experienced and successful as Rob, then your biography just becomes way too long. Well, Rob, what more can I say besides welcoming you to the Wool Academy podcast? And it is a great honor to have you on the show. How are you today?
Very well, thank you, Elizabeth. And it's really great to talk to you. It's a bit of a glowing introduction, but it's a bit of fun, and I've really enjoyed working on many industries, but most of all in the wool industry. That's kept me very busy for the last 7 years with AWI and the Australian wool industry, and even prior to that, working for a number of years as a consultant to the wool industry board here. So yeah, my background is as you say. Business planning, strategic marketing, management consulting, and yes, I'm advising a number of clients.
I'm especially excited because we will talk about my favorite topic, which besides wool is communications, and I think you will give our listeners a lot of value today. So shall we just dive right into the topic?
Yep, let's dive into it.
Okay, great. So how would you describe, in your own words, how communications for businesses has changed over the recent years?
I think over the last 2 decades in particular, the business of communication has basically reinvented itself totally. What we've seen is that there's been a very traditional set of media that's been in consideration probably for 30 or 40 years. And by traditional, I mean TV, radio, print, outdoor, point of sale. All of that has now been put in a different context when we've seen the emergence of digital media online and most recently social media. That in itself has led to a really dramatic fragmentation of how you can reach an audience. When you're talking about a global product like wool, it's a really difficult challenge to identify what are the most cost-efficient ways of reaching the right audience. And for that reason, we've really had to redefine how the consumer now purchases. If you look at the use of media by consumers in the luxury and the high end of the fashion market, for example, it's quite common now that they'll combine online, offline, and in-store as different ways of looking at a product prior to, through, and after the purchase. So if you're looking at a whole cycle of consumer awareness through understanding, through desire, through purchase, and then through post-product satisfaction, you really have to look at a very different and much more complex way of reaching them. The positive part of that is that with the advent of far greater computing power, we often hear people talk about big data, and big data implies that it's massive. In fact, the databases are massive, but the insights that we can gather now are much more precise, and in that complex environment, you need that precision to try and target cost effectively.
Yeah, what do you think, how well has the wool industry embraced all the possibilities that we have now with communications?
I think it's interesting. When I started with wool, one of the things that I used to do quite a lot was we'd go out and talk to growers, and the first question we'd open a seminar or a discussion with was, tell me what business you're in. And 99% of them would say, oh, we're in the business of growing wool. My answer to that was, no, you're in the business of fashion apparel, and that caused a bit of consternation. But in reality, the wool industry was very slow to embrace the need to tell its story. Typically, it saw itself as a commodity producer without seeing the downside of that. And the downside was, if you're a commodity producer, you tend to be a price taker. Over the last, I suppose, 10 to 15 years in particular, we've seen that slowly change in some areas. The high fashion brands and the brands that sell in their own branded boutiques and in department stores have really rapidly accelerated their use of more digital media and today's communication opportunities more recently than not. There are some brilliant examples of how the, if you like, the consumer end, the retail end of the wool industry is using mass communication as it now exists and one-to-one marketing very well. What I would say is that if you look right down the supply chain backwards towards the grower, the way that the whole industry has embraced communication is quite fragmented. The closer you get to the, I guess, the origin of the fibre and its processing, the less likely you are to see proactive marketing going on in support of the fibre. As an example, AWI, the Walmart industry was, or Walmart business, was fairly passive for about a decade before 2010. I still see a degree of passivity in marketing in early stage processors, spinners and weavers. Even though they're talking to a business-to-business market, there hasn't been a rapid embrace, if you like, of digital media and of creating stories that can relate what each of these companies adds to either the end product that wool is produced into or indeed their own businesses. So I guess the short answer is it's been fairly fragmented. It's different in terms of the rate of adoption in different levels of the supply chain. But if you look at the consumer end of it and the brands, they have, some of those brands are leading edge in terms of embracing digital and social media.
Yes, and what also always amazed me during my time when I worked at IWTO is when we asked members what they thought needed improvement in the wool industry to be more successful, one of the topics that always came up was that wool industry members thought that there was a need for more promotion and communications. And I always wondered, you know, because we do have these wonderful campaigns that Woolmark does and that the Campaign for Wool does and many other industry members, but still it was perceived as not being enough. So why do you think does the wool industry feel that it is not enough, and how could more promotion be done for wool and the wool industry?
I think they feel it's not enough because what you really see is promotion at the very front end or the grower end of the business, which is the AWI and Walmart, and at the very sharp consumer end, which is retail, you don't see a lot of participation in the business of marketing through the other elements of the supply chain. There's not a lot of collaboration. If you look at other industries, for example, the cotton industry, you find that there's probably deeper engagement with the various steps along the supply chain, with the end result of marketing cotton apparel. And there's been a good, solid and consistent track record of people who are advertising, for example, a product made out of Supima cotton. Supima being on the label, being in the communications, and the various producers being involved in telling that story. Wool's probably come into that quite late, and it's really been left to either end of the supply chain rather than a more collaborative effort right across the supply chain. I often heard exactly what you heard, Elizabeth, which is, you know, why isn't there more promotion being done? And I suspect the other component to that is that the industry saw itself as being a commodity, a price taker. And as such, they didn't really understand the need to communicate in order to differentiate the fibre, in order for wool to be seen as a value-adding component to fashion and apparel and footwear. That lack of perception of the value of differentiation and the value of the story about wool is probably what held back that sense of, you know, are we promoting enough? Once AWI started, we've seen a number of the supply chain brands start to move in that area. One example is Skabal. We work closely with Skabal, and they took a line of saying, okay, we're going to identify the source of our wool fibre. We're going to celebrate the fact that it's spun, woven and produced into clothing, and then tell that story to our consumer. The result of that is it allows Skabal to really substantiate a higher than average market price for its end product, because the product components, the ingredients, are seen to be of value. So I think many people, not many, but there are still people in the industry who see wool as a commodity, who don't see it as being value adding to the whole business of creating apparel. The other part I would say is that as we reposition wool as a luxury ingredient, the luxury business really requires a heavy reliance on communication, but very targeted. And quite often, people in the supply chain don't tap in to what's happening. I'll give you an example. By introducing the International Woolmark Prize, what we were doing was leading with a series of events to market wool, whereas most, I think, of the supply chain thought that traditional advertising was the way to go. The problem is that, you know, marketing has really moved on to the point where if you don't have live interaction, you don't have things like events and social media, then you really don't get the visibility within a very competitive framework of what do I buy when I buy my next piece of fashion clothing. Greater engagement with designers and retailers has led to them becoming more active. And I think that response you heard of there's never enough promotion in wool probably is starting to change as we see retailers more deeply involved. I know in the recent conference that was held in Scotland with His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales, the principal supporter of that conference was Marks & Spencer. 10 years ago, or even, you know, 7 years ago, Marks & Spencer wouldn't necessarily be focusing on the wool ingredient as part of their product story. And here they are now basically engaged in the campaign for wool as an advocate and a public advocate of wool used in the end product. So I think you'll see that perception of not enough promotion being done change. But the bottom line is without stronger collaboration across the supply chain and greater engagement by all the parties involved, it's likely to be not as visible and perhaps not as not seen as sufficient in the face of competitive products that are out there, like, for example, cotton.
Yeah, and what you said, that there's a need for a stronger engagement within the industry to collaborate, that was also actually one of the key topics that always came up, that there was a need for more collaboration. And the other thing you said was that it has become more complex, that's what you referred to in the beginning of our conversation. And as you know, many of the wool industry companies might recognize that they need to do more communications. However, they then often struggle with time or resources. And what
recommendation do you have for these companies? What steps can they take to improve their communications? And where would be the right place to start with?
Oh, that's a broad and a pretty compelling question. I would start by saying that marketing, I guess, used to be seen by the wool industry as a whole as the fluffy part of the business they do. That's not the case in the 21st century. Marketing is a core, all-engaging discipline that needs a whole-of-company approach. In saying that, yes, there are companies with limited resources, and I've worked with quite a number of those, even some of the more sophisticated spinners in the market, that haven't really defined a marketing capability. For me, there's about seven steps that I think any business should take. The first is what probably comes natural, which is to clearly define the business that the company's in. But unless that definition of the business includes where the consumer market, where the product ends up in consumer terms, it's likely that communication will take less of a focus. So step one, define the business, do it in terms of not only the process and the industrial market, but the end product that it's going to contribute to. The second thing is recognize that, or part of, I guess, the first step, but the other thing is to recognize that any business in the supply chain is in fact a brand. And what I mean by that is a brand is where all that value accrues of the investment that you make in marketing the product. And whether you're an industrial supplier, a B2B marketer, or a B2C, having a clear understanding of what your business is and what its public face is pretty important. Those things, defining the business well and brand marketing, understanding that, leads you to be able to define some pretty clear communication goals. So that's step one. Step two is once you know those goals, is really clearly defining who your target audiences, your target markets are. Who are the key stakeholders that will impact your ability to meet those business goals and those communication goals? One of the things I find that people forget is that one of the most powerful marketing assets you have is, in fact, the staff that work for the company. And I don't just mean the management staff. As consumers want more and more information around where their product comes from, staff become very solid assets in terms of helping tell that story. So defining all the stakeholders and making sure that definition of a target audience or a target group is very clear and very encompassing is a pretty critical second step. The third step is make sure that you prepare a marketing communication strategy that isn't just tactics. It's not just about the next 6 months, the next season show, the next edition of Premier Vision. It really needs to encompass a 3-year business cycle. And when you do that marketing communication strategy, every component of it should include the metrics by which you're going to measure its success. One of the things that can come unstuck in marketing is if you don't have clear metrics, you really become very subjective about whether things have been a success or a failure. So making sure that you do a proper 3-year strategy, include the metrics before you then dive into the tactical elements that you might execute in one season is pretty important. Fourth step, what are the key messages that you want to communicate to those core target groups through that strategy that you're going to define? And here it's important not to try and be all things to all people, to be very focused on what your key benefit or your key differentiation is between yourself and your competitors, and the key benefit ultimately to your end consumer. Fifth step, identify the tools that will help you achieve those goals. And by tools, I mean not just the channels that we talked about before, not just traditional, digital and social, but also the content that's going to carry the messages. Increasingly, what you see with the fragmentation of media is the need to have really significant, compelling, well-produced content. And increasingly, that content is video content. Telling a story in a static medium is all well and good, but the most highly engaging media tend to rely on good quality video, very focused on what it is that you want to get across to your consumer. The sixth step is make sure that you execute that plan. It's very easy to be distracted by shiny new things, and a number of companies, even in very sophisticated consumer goods areas, get distracted by the fact that there's yet another social medium. The point of writing a strategy and a plan is that it's thought through well, and then it's executed. Some of the tactics may be adjusted time after time, But bottom line is you need to execute a plan that you've written. And then last step is that you're not really finished until you've actually assessed, reviewed, measured, checked, adjusted, and then repeat the process. So it's about between 5, 6, 7 steps, I guess, to make a success. To your question initially, do you need to identify an internal resource to do that? I think you can start by actually getting the plan very clearly laid out and making sure it really articulates what your business is, what the priorities are, who you're talking to, what you want to say to them, how you want them to respond, and then measuring that level of response.
Wow, that was a lot of interesting points, and I love those 7 steps. We'll make sure to note them also down in the show notes so that our listeners can access them more easily. But thank you so much for that. I want to go a little bit deeper into the point, I think it was point 5, where you talked about the communication tools and you mentioned channels. And I was talking to a client the other day who was investing a lot of money into advertising in magazines, and he all of a sudden realized that most of his target audience wasn't actually reading any of those magazines anymore. So he was also, for him, that was a learning, but obviously then that leaves you with, okay, but which communication tools and channels do I need to invest in? What would you say to a client like that? How can you help him? Would you help him?
I think the first thing is to understand that if you have a clear message and a clarity of what it is you want to say, then the other component to that is to understand how each of the media options that you have work and who listens. There is a lot of research around about which audiences are delivered and in what form of engagement different channels deliver. A lot of people I'll give you an example. Social media, I guess, has been the obsession of a lot of advertisers for the last few years. But common sense says that it's only one medium that impacts a consumer. At the same time as we've seen this explosion of social media, we've seen reality TV buy. Reality TV tends to work in a slightly different way, and you can present a slightly more crafted and directed message to a broader audience group. Social media is a peer-to-peer medium where people can talk about your product and its good or bad experiences. Outdoor media, in-store media, all of these things work quite differently. So it's just a matter of, if you don't have the research, applying some common sense and thinking through, if I want to reach a particular target audience member, a guy who's about to buy a new suit, for example, typically what sort of lifestyle would they have? What media would they be exposed to? In what context? One of the things I find very useful is with a 14-year-old daughter, thinking about the fashion industry is simply watching how she consumes media. And many, I think, of our colleagues in the wool industry will have sons or daughters who are of target audience age group and media consumption profile. And just having a look at how they use different medium and when they use it is important. The other thing I would say is that one of the key dynamics that's happening right now is the absolute explosion of mobile and high-end telephone technology in terms of its role of informing consumers as they go through that path to purchase. Smartphones, because they have access to the internet as well as to social media, is really driving a lot of consumer behaviour change in terms of media consumption. So when you do actually look at the channels you're going to use, assume that whatever you create for those channels needs to be viable for mobile media, either whether it's television consumption, whether it's social media, whether it's web pages. They absolutely need to be mobile phone friendly. But from my point of view, again, it goes back to strategy. If you're really clear on what it is you want to do, there's enough information around to identify how the different media options work. And it's matching those options to how you want to engage, whether you want to build brand awareness in a particular target audience, whether you want to actually get them to convert awareness to desire and transact with you on a mobile, on a website, for example. It's just being very clear about the strategy that you want to pursue. The other thing I would say is, and I made this point earlier, is when you're developing content that you want to push out in media, it's important to be focused. You can't be all things to all people. If you have a particular brand and a particular set of attributes you want to communicate, then don't be distracted by trying to tell different stories in different media. Tell the same story in the relevant format to each of the media. I'll give you an example. We started a program started by a very, very bright video producer, Ari, at AWI, called The Source. And The Source was about telling the story of wool growers in different areas of Australia and how they produce their merino wool. When we produced that content, we made it available in what we call snackable lengths, so 7 to 12 minutes. We made sure it worked on YouTube, on Vimeo, on our websites, and we tried to use that content in as many different ways as we could by planning up front how flexible the formats needed to be. And I think that's the case with any of the people that are thinking about marketing their product and advertising, communicating its benefits, is to make sure that whatever you produce gives you that flexibility to use each of the media in the appropriate way.
Yeah, thanks for sharing all those examples. And I do also love the work that Ari did. So he did a wonderful job for the Woolmark company as well.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Rob Langtree. And remember, this was only part one of the interview. And next week, we will be launching the second part in episode number 10. Make sure you don't miss anything by visiting the show notes at elizabethvandelden.com/009. elizabethvandelden.com/009. That's also where you find the transcript of today's show. If you liked today's episode, may I suggest that you subscribe to our podcast so that you don't miss any of our weekly episodes. Also, let us know what you think of the show by leaving a comment in the comment section underneath each podcast episode on the website. Maybe you have a particular question that you would like us to ask or a suggestion for a guest for one of our upcoming episodes. Whatever it is, we would love to hear from you. Thank you and see you next week.